Today on the 21st Show, the story of The Onion. Born in the Midwest in 1988, the satirical newspaper has come a long way. It's also influenced the culture of news satire, including such phenomena as The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. We'll talk about all that with Christine Wentz. She was part of the original Onion team, and now she's written a history of the paper called Funny Because It's True. I'm Brian Mackey with Christine Wentz today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The way we find out what's happening in the world has changed a lot in recent years. Once newspapers were the authoritative source, even as radio and TV took hold. But now, to the extent that we do follow headlines, the internet is where we do it. The satirical newspaper The Onion has, over the past four decades, not only made fun of the news and the way we digest it, it's also been a part of many of those changes in the media. The paper has its roots in the Midwest, specifically Madison, Wisconsin, 1988. After years of local and regional success, its humor found a new home and national attention on the internet, and its stories have made their mark. From headlines like Midwest Discovered Between East-West Coasts to video stories like this.
Congress has passed a bill naming incomprehensible shouting the official language of the United States. After attracting the attention of several leaders in Washington last year, the initiative's political supporters argued for months that the nation should formally recognize incomprehensible shouting as the only truly American way to communicate.
I'm sick and tired of listening to people who say that Americans should not know what they know, and that's not what it is, what the policy is. The red-blooded American is what we have in this day and age.
All right. It's funny because it's true. The past few decades have taken The Onion through many ups and downs, from navigating comedy in the aftermath of 9/11 to the rise of internet video and then clickbait. And then in recent years, the question of what it even means to be satirical in a world where truth cannot be taken for granted. Christine Wentz was part of The Onion back when it was getting started. She worked for the Upstart paper as an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She went on to a career in writing, editing, art, and history, and more recently, she's written a book about The Onion's history. It's called Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. It's available now from Running Press. Wentz joins me for the hour today to talk about all that and more. Christine, welcome to The 21st Show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we are taking your calls throughout the hour today, 800-222-9455. Are you like me? Do you have favorite Onion articles, headlines that have stuck with you, perhaps after decades, after you first read them or saw the clip? What's a moment, also, when you realized when satire had gotten at some deeper truth? Let's talk about it. And also, let's talk about what place satire has in a post-truth world. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Christine, The Onion's motto is tu stultus es. It's Latin. Apparently, it translates to you are stupid or you are dumb.
Yes.
What does that motto represent?
Yeah. So when I first started working on this book, I didn't actually know exactly. And I thought, well, that's not a very nice motto, you know, and then, but after I talked to people, I realized that what they're referring to is the sort of sheep-like behavior of the American news consuming public to sort of believe whatever they're told and what authorities tell them to do. And so The Onion has a sort of persona of being this all-knowing, all-encompassing, you know, monolithic news source. And that motto relates to the point of view of this satirical, monolithic news voice.
And it turns out a lot of us are pretty stupid, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's very hard to tell, especially these days, what's real and what isn't. And a lot of the ways that we used to use to discern what's true or not are sort of rapidly being dissolved by AI and other things. So yeah, we're in a really interesting time right now.
AI and other things being bad actors in our society, but we can talk about that as we go on. What made the Midwest and Madison, Wisconsin in particular, fertile ground, so to speak, for something like The Onion to take root?
Yeah, I think The Onion is very Midwestern. There's a couple of different reasons. I think that, the Midwest sort of has an anonymous feel to it. And The Onion, didn't use bylines, never used bylines, really. There were some fake ones early on, but The Onion is written anonymously. People from the Midwest, typically aren't pushy about seeking fame and fortune. And I think that definitely applies to The Onion. It doesn't mean you're not interested in it succeeding, but there's a kind of a different style in the Midwest, I think. And the Midwest, as that headline about Midwest discovered between East and West Coasts, we're sort of overlooked by, the coastal elites and I'm saying that in quotes, and big media and that sort of thing. So all of that really informed The Onion's point of view. The Onion also was created by Gen X Midwesterners. And so that kind of takes this all sort of times 10, I think.
Yeah, Gen X. So we can get into that too. But let's talk a little bit about the media environment that The Onion came into in the 1980s, right? What, for those, I'm imagining some of our listeners were not around then and didn't know what things were like. We didn't all have these glowing rectangles in our pockets.
Right, exactly. So there were a lot of changes. And the book, I like to say that Funny Because It's True is sort of a stealth history of the media since the 80s. It's told through the lens of The Onion. So I'm kind of giving that history with a little bit of like sugar and jokes on top, which is, I think, what The Onion does too. But in the 80s, there were a lot of things happening with deregulation happening on the federal level. There was the beginning of this sort of monopolistic kind of takeover of media was really kind of revving up. Cable TV news was just getting going. And all of that was really starting to rapidly kind of degrade the sort of staid, reliable, kind of calm Walter Cronkite world that of the 70s, this kind of the 50s through the 80s, I would say. And all of that was like kind of rapidly being replaced. And there were all these kind of ridiculous things happening with news becoming entertainment. Ratings for the news now became a thing. And so The Onion was kind of coming into that environment and responding to that in a lot of ways. And the founder of The Onion, Tim Keck, actually came from a Chicago area newspaper family. His dad was an editor at the Hammond Times of Hammond, Indiana. He was the president of the Chicago Area Newspaper Association. His mom was a really amazing investigative reporter for environmental issues in the 1970s and 80s. And all of that kind of tragically came to an end. And then, I thought it was very interesting that a few years later, Tim founds The Onion.
I still get a community newspaper delivered to my house once a week that's mostly headlines about prep sports and then wire copy. But can you talk about some of the local news inspiration for The Onion, right? I'm looking at some of these early front pages you have in the book, dead guy found.
that's my friend Matt Cook with his head buried up in the snowbank there. Some consider that the first real Onion story. That's from the first year of The Onion. The staff of The Onion were all, everyone was like, 19, 20, 21 years old, so very young. But almost everyone had come from Midwestern, either small towns or rural or small town Midwestern environments, and everyone had experiences with these local papers. And I grew up in Spring Green, Wisconsin, and we had a great local paper. But everything in it was, the sports teams and the spelling bee and like things like that, which is fine. But definitely everybody at The Onion was really had grown up reading these Midwestern kind of local newspapers, and that absolutely affected the whole area man thing. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. There's a picture of the very first front page of the very first issue of The Onion. How does that compare to what, The Onion would become even a few years later, right? Both in form and content.
Yeah, so the Onion, the Onion story is also, I also tell it as like a history of the changes in technology. So the Onion was created on kind of the first round of like desktop publishing, as we called it back in the day. And so the first issue of the Onion was created in a very early version of PageMaker on a, you know, an ancient Mac classic. You know, there was one computer in the office that we all shared. And the first version is this very, you know, amateurish, you know, kind of put together by 20-year-olds who have no idea what they're doing. And then as time, but from the very beginning, though, there was a satirical story on the front page. It was more like Weekly World News kind of parody at that time. But it really started the tradition of doing that fake news and using the illustrations and the visuals to emphasize that. And later on, it became, you know, much more professionalized and kind of elaborate. But that first issue really does kind of indicate where the Onion would go in a few years.
So you're not a founder, but you are like a day one presence with the Onion, right?
Yeah, exactly. Literally, day one. Like Tim Keck was my roommate. And I remember him coming back and from a trip and saying, we're going to start a newspaper. And I was like, okay. And like, nobody knew what that meant or how to do that, you know? Although he kind of did because of growing up in a newspaper family. So it was like a logical thing for him to do. So yeah, a bunch of, you know, 20-year-old UW-Madison undergrads, you know, just got together in an apartment and we're like, okay, we're going to make this thing and we don't know what it's going to be and it's got to go to press pretty soon. So we'll just make up all the stories. And that's kind of how it happened.
So what was your role, though, in making the Onion in those early
years? Early on, I was they asked me to be the art director. I didn't know what that was, but so I actually became the copy editor. But I did do some illustrations. And basically, at that point in time, it's like a startup. You know, I mean, it is a startup. Everybody sort of did everything. So, you know, I helped a little bit with brainstorming stories. I helped develop them and write them. But, you know, but sort of everybody did everything.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking with Christine Wentz, author of Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you have a favorite Onion story, something that's stuck with you all these years. Every now and then, my college roommate from the late 1990s and I will send each other the link to a column headlined, "You Will Suffer Humiliation When the Sports Team From My Area Defeats the Sports Team From Your Area." Wonderful.
That's another classic for sure.
A classic, yes. Let's go to the phones, 800-222-9455. We've got Tim from Franklin Grove. Tim, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hi. I got introduced to the Onion decades ago as my uncle up in Madison would bring down a copy now and then, my little farm by Franklin Grove. I ended up tracking elephants in Cameroon, Central Africa, for a couple of years, and he sent me a care package, including a couple of copies of the Onion. I read them, had my laugh, left them in the village. But when I came back to the village a few months later, just people looked at me in disbelief. Having read it, not knowing it was satire, they had quite a few questions about what was going on in our country.
It's not just people in rural Cameroon that don't quite understand its satire, though, as we can get into.
Exactly.
Tim, do you have a favorite story?
They got passed around to quite a few people around the five villages in Cameroon, and they just shook their head when they saw me last, you know, the
Amazing.
Next time. I love it.
Tim, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Christine, how about that? You know, I guess this is a good time to talk about the people who sort of take the Onion to be more authoritative than it is.
Yeah, I mean, the Onion has always delivered everything completely straight. I mean, that's part of the absolute ethos of the Onion style of humor. And I don't know, there's just people see things in print and it's like the critical thinking part of your brain just shuts off or something. And so even from year one, the most ridiculous, like clearly like amateurly presented and, you know, awkwardly written stories would be taken as real, you know? And so I do go into a sort of little theory in the book about a couple of reasons why that happens. But I mean, it happens to all kinds of people. You know, there's been politicians that have circulated Onion stories as if they were true, usually because the story confirmed something they already believed, you know, about the public. There's been international stories about the Chinese government thought Onion stories were true. So, you know, they're playing with a form that makes it, you really have to put on your critical thinking brain to really understand what's happening. And that, you know, and so in the book, I do also talk about the development in, you know, after, you know, 2015 or so of what I call bad fake news. The Onion is good fake news. It's satire trying to make the world a better place. Bad fake news, you know, Fox News, InfoWars, that sort of thing, are using the news format to do something like really different.
Yeah. And it's like, if you put it in a newspaper, if you put it on the radio, you're Orson Welles and you report on an alien attack, or if you, you know, say it from the steps of Congress, people are primed to think it's true, whether
exactly.
it is or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. It short circuits that.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of text messages from listeners we got in about the Onion. Which we were talking about today, because we were speaking with Christine Wentz, author of Funny Because It's True, A History of the Onion, and how it, as the subhead says, how the Onion created modern American news satire. We heard from Lloyd in Danville, who said, not familiar with the Onion, but the truth of the matter about satire is that on rare occasions, those inflicted by it can come to the realization that the joke is indeed on them. Satire does bring about change in practice, sort of societal consciousness. And John in Iliopolis said, so many classic headlines to choose from. I guess he is familiar with The Onion. A couple of favorites come to mind. 37 record store clerks fear dead and Yola Tango concert disaster. Drugs win drug war is another one.
Absolutely.
John says, I've always been a fan of satire from Mad Magazine as a kid to the National Lampoon, The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, and The Onion. Good satire can often reveal truths that elude conventional news reporting. Satire remains essential in today's world of head-shaking headlines. All right, we're going to continue with Christine Wentz. Her book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. We'll be back in a moment. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the history of The Onion, the satirical newspaper and website, and its role in our culture and our media with Christine Wentz, who worked on the paper in its earliest years in Madison, Wisconsin. And she is the author, more recently, of Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. We'll get back to the phones in a moment. Christine, I wanted to read for you a couple more text messages we got, though. Ben in Champaign said, this segment can't air without at least a mention of the depressingly evergreen point-counterpoint, and its point, this war will destabilize the entire Mideast region and set off a global shockwave of anti-Americanism. Counterpoint, no, it won't. We also heard from Aaron in Springfield, who added the sadly oft-posted headline, no way to prevent this, says only nation where this regularly happens, which refers to gun violence, mass shootings. He says, that's peak Onion to me. Our country faces a number of problems that other similar countries seem to have solved, mass shootings being among the most dramatic. And the Onion perfectly points this out time and time again. On the lighter side, I'm also quite fond of the Diamond Joe characterization of Joe Biden during the Obama administration. So, Christine, The Onion, it's obviously very much fiction, but it's deeply rooted in the truth. Talk about that dichotomy.
Yeah. So I just want to mention, by the way, that the gun violence headline, that's been reposted something like 42 times at this point since it first came out, I think, in about 2016. So, yeah. There's something about the way that satire and humor works that allows people to kind of get to the point sort of immediately. And The Onion, because of its format, can really say things that I think that other, that sort of real journalists wish they could say, and they can't somehow using their format. So the Onion is always in their way of writing. They're also, when they are working on stories, they're very clear about what their target is. I gained a lot of respect for the Onion's writing editorial process while I was working on this book. Everything seems sort of effortless, but you know, it's kind of like when you see a really great stand-up comedian, and you don't realize that they've been working on that routine for like 2 years before you hear it. The Onion works really, really hard to make their work really, really sharp and you know, just dead on target. And I think that's part of their ability to tell the truth.
Including a lot of attention to Associated Press style, right? The AP style book. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah. So they especially when the Onion was kind of developing its, you know, mature voice, if we could call it that, in the around 94, 95, 96, where it really made a move toward very concrete and very dead on, deadpan AP style. And they had a copy editor named Stephen Thompson, who's at NPR now, who was absolutely maniacal about making every news story in The Onion adhere to AP style. And so AP style can have this sort of pretend like you don't know anything, strange naivete before you sort of before you write an article. And so The Onion kind of takes that and puts, you know, this insane material into this like very straight format. And that contrast really makes it funny. You know, I think a lot of Onion jokes, they work because they're in AP style. If you kind of told a similar joke in a different format, it might not work as well. But AP style is like the straight man to their comedy.
I understand even in their pitch meetings, at least back in the day, I've heard that you had to present it in like a very neutral sort of deadpan way, right? You can't be like, oh, this is a good one, guys. Listen up.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and they, you know, now typically the way the headline meetings work is, you know, every writer brings in like 20, 25 headlines, and then they kind of all recite them out. And only the ones that everybody thinks are the best get in the paper. Although the Onion News Network used to do this with their little running ticker at the bottom of the screen. And now the new Onion's website also has a little ticker at the top of their screen. And I look at those, and some of those are really, really funny headlines, but I can pretty much guarantee you that they're also the headlines that came up in pitch meetings that didn't warrant a whole story, but the headline was funny on its own. So there it is. It's right. Recycling.
It's multi-use for content. All right, let's go to the phones. 800-222-9455. We have Patty calling from Ottawa on line 4. Patty, thanks for calling in.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling. I understand you are an Onion fan.
Yes. I just want to say that me and my ex-husband I think it's one of the first ones. Holy man lands on moon. We had that like frame. We loved The Onion. It gave us humor. And especially on these times, we need this kind of humor. We need laughter. We need down to earth, great hysterical laughter. And The Onion has provided that for years. And I just want to say thank you for putting something out there like that. I'm a avid, also magazine, Mad Magazine fan. So any kind of humor that you have given in the past, in your paper, we have enjoyed it, and our friends have enjoyed it. I just want to say thank you. We need humor, and The Onion has provided that all these years.
All right, Patty, thank you so much for calling in. And I'm just going to say, listeners, some of our listeners might have missed a little of Patty's comments because she referred to a headline that was, holy bleep, man lands on moon. But she did not say the bleep. So we cannot swear on public radio. We are in enough trouble with the federal government as it is. Please don't create more for us. But thank you for the call, Patty. Christine, I don't know if you want to respond to that.
I just want to add that the man on the moon headline comes from The Onion's Thurber Award-winning book, Our Dumb Century, which came out in 1999 and is absolutely a classic. It's all original work written just for this book. It was a bestseller. And it's probably one of the funniest. I had nothing to do with it, but it's one of the funniest books ever written. And it satirizes the entire 20th century through front pages from every year. And it's absolutely worth tracking down a copy. It's absolutely magnificent.
which people may not remember, but that was very much in vogue. There were a million of those books in 1999.
You can find them used a lot of different places. So yeah.
No, I just mean as a stylistic thing, right? I'm sure the New York Times had one.
They satirized the idea of like, you know, it's the end of the century, and you know, we're gonna. The New York Times did one. You know, I'm sure a lot of newspapers did that, and then Onion did one too.
Amazing, Paul in Carbondale on line two. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a lifelong fan of The Onion, introduced to it by my brother in downtown Chicago. We would wait for the drop-off to happen, and I remember like people would line up waiting for the new stack to show up. I had a buddy, Jason, that actually wrote for The Onion for a little while, and he was all that we were so proud of him, and he got one posted that was about how old-school homeless are a little offended about how the new-school homeless behave. You know, they don't like it too much. And I know in Nashville specifically, I saw a headline when there are all these kickball leagues where it said a bunch of grown people get along playing kickball. I don't know if that was the exact verbiage, but it was hysterical. I'm super grateful for The Onion and what it is.
Awesome. Thank you for that call, Paul. Max is calling from Rockford. Max, I understand you went to UW-Madison and were an Onion reader.
I did, and I just want to personally thank Christine for being a part of some of my favorite memories of going to college there and heading into Bascom Hall and grabbing the Onion newspaper on the way to class. And my favorite article was "My Vote Cancels Out Your Vote," about a uninformed voter who relished in the fact that they were uninformed and were proud that their vote canceled out my informed vote. I can't think of a more appropriate article for these days.
Thanks for that, Max. And one more call for now, Corey, who is actually driving to Madison, Wisconsin. Be safe, Corey, but thanks for calling in.
Hi, good afternoon. Good morning, actually. Yeah, I just wanted to share that I remember The Onion as a Gen X high schooler growing up in Madison. I wasn't even old enough to drive yet, so I would ride my bike down to State Street and pick up a copy at the Parthenon or at Ragstack or at the Union. And I just really credit The Onion with kind of awakening my young brain to the idea of meta perspective. You know, I didn't even know that word then, but the idea that we could look at a news article or, a TV news story and kind of process that on a level different than face value to think critically about why are they saying this and what's going on here. So real fond memories of The Onion from the early 80s days.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Corey. Appreciate the call. I want to return to this idea that people think The Onion is real. We got a text from Tina in Urbana, who said she discovered The Onion in the early 2000s through, as she says, an article about the molestation of children by Catholic priests. She says she read it aloud to her roommates. And she goes on, quote, "As I'm beginning to reprimand them for downright laughing at me, they told me what The Onion was and what satire was. They explained The Onion's purpose, and we went back through the article discussing why they would write satire about such sensitive topics. They helped me understand how The Onion was highlighting a very real, very disturbing reality behind how people in power respond to such horrifying events. This actually quite impacted my interest in current events and influenced my ability to think critically." Tina, thank you so much for that. Christine, talk about, you actually have like what, 5 or 6 points in the book, I'm trying to remember, about, you know, why you think people take The Onion as real.
Yeah. First, I just want to say I really appreciate the comments about The Onion teaching people to think critically, because that's like the point of news satire. That's the kind of, was the point of The Daily Show, the point of The Colbert Report. I mean, they're using that format to say something more than just something that gets a laugh. But yeah, so I should find the page. I don't have that book open to that page, but there are a couple different reasons why people think news articles are true. One is just simply that it's in print. You know, I kind of talked about that before. I think that probably affects older people at this point rather than younger people who are used to, you know, conversing in text and stuff like that. But back in the day, it wasn't in print unless it had been edited and supposedly fact-checked and that sort of thing. So I can see how that can mess with people's minds. But one of the things that I think affects people's, you know, willingness to believe a fake news story as being true is when it kind of confirms something they already believe, right? So there was a Republican congressperson who sent around on his Facebook page the Onion headline, Planned Parenthood opens $8 billion abortionplex. And because he thought it was real, you know, see what the liberals are doing, right?
Right,
and there's
right.
been another, and but there's also, there's one that was sort of kind of heartbreaking to me. Sometimes people believe a story because it fulfills a need that they have emotionally, you know, medically. So there's a story about cigarettes called something.
I have it in front of me here. New smokable nicotine sticks. Can they help smokers quit?
Exactly. Yeah. And unfortunately, The Onion received a whole bunch of calls from people desperate to stop smoking saying, where can I find these new smokable nicotine sticks? Yeah, it was it's sad. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you also have irrational fears and,
yes.
You know, and I guess this is the big one, the inability to discern multi-layeredness or irony.
Yeah.
This is a chronic condition in American life. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I really believe that's true. I don't know, there's something about the way that digital media has made this a lot worse, I think, because digital media is about like activating your lizard brain and getting you to click on stuff. And that's like the opposite of deep reading. It's the opposite of kind of a slow, kind of gradual, kind of in-depth understanding that you get, say, when you read a novel. And, you know, people who, and The Onion was written by people that had history degrees and literature degrees, you know, people who just thought about reading and writing in a really different way. I think that's definitely part of it.
Yeah. All right. Let me remind listeners, we're speaking with Christine Wentz, author of Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. So we've talked a lot about print, but The Onion was pretty relatively early into the digital space, although it wasn't easy. I want to start off this part of the conversation with a clip. This is from the NPR show Car Talk from the mid-1990s.
Here's the news. Clinton deploys vowels to Bosnia. Cities of Zbrzeszcz and Grozny to be the first recipients. Before an emergency joint session of Congress yesterday, President Clinton announced U.S. plans to deploy over 75,000 vowels to the war-torn region of Bosnia.
Really?
The deployment, the largest of its kind in American history, will provide the region with the critically needed letters A, E, I, O, and U, and is hoped to render countless Bosnian names more pronounceable. Here's a quote, he said. Clinton said, for 6 years we've stood by while names like Jurgen and Zlidnia and Glum have been horribly butchered by millions around the world. Today, the United States must finally stand up and say, enough.
So, Christine, talk about how stories like that, you know, were spreading as the internet sort of grew in acceptance and popularity.
I love that you tracked that down, by the way. So that
credit to producer Christine for that.
Yeah, thank you. That's amazing. Yeah, so that story, it's like circa 1995 or so. This was but right before The Onion created its own website in 1996. And this was back when people were sort of sending things around via email all the time. And people were typing Onion articles into emails and sending them to each other. And that's how that ended up on Car Talk. And then other people started taking credit for it and that sort of thing. So in 1996, The Onion made its first website. And at that point, the writing staff, I had nothing to do with it at this point, but the absolute classic writing staff had developed The Onion's voice and style. And so it came on the internet in 96, fully formed when there were hardly any other humor sites, and it just went supernova, like almost immediately. And so The Onion went from, you know, regional sort of underground paper to like, you know, hundreds of thousands of readers, like within weeks, basically at that time.
All right. We are talking with Christine Wentz, author of Funny Because It's True. It's a history of The Onion and modern American news satire and really the media during the past few decades that The Onion has been around since its founding in Madison, Wisconsin, 1988, which she was a part of. It was founded by one of her roommates at the time. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're going to take another break. And we will continue with Christine Wentz here. Again, 800-222-9455. I think I have time to share one more text. We'll save that for when we come back. All right. Yeah. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the history of The Onion, the satirical newspaper. My guest is Christine Wentz, who worked on the paper in its earliest years in Madison, Wisconsin. She's written a book called Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Another text message, this one from David in Mount Morris, who says, my favorite news video from The Onion has always been breaking news, some bull bleep happening somewhere. They lose a little bit of the sting when you can't swear, but so it goes. He says they've always captured the humor, hypocrisy, insanity, and absurdity of the news cycle with precision accuracy, no matter who's involved. They're unbiased in their shotgun approach to humor in their articles. They're probably the only news source left in America with journalistic integrity. Yeah, it's that bad these days that I had to say that. All right, David, thanks for the message. I'll try not to take that personally. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. I do want to play a couple. So we talked before the break about moving to the internet. And then, you know, we have the pivot to video. And The Onion is a big part of that in the media space. I want to listen to a few samples of the video era of The Onion. This first one is called Apple Introduces Revolutionary New Laptop with No Keyboard.
Everything is just a few hundred clicks away.
Apple is calling the MacBook wheel the most intuitive product ever designed.
Here at Apple, we like to think that we're giving customers features they don't even realize they want yet.
This is a laptop with basically an iPod click wheel instead of a keyboard. There's also Prague's Kafka International Airport named Most Alienating Airport.
Travelers also report being frustrated by the airport's unusual security procedure, which includes a time-consuming personal interview.
The security guard asked me for like 80 minutes, are you who you say you are? Are you who you say you are? And finally, he writes liar in the back of my hand and lets me pass.
Airport officials say the complaints are unfounded.
All problems are traveler's own. If you only made certain to properly follow proper protocols, no such problems would exist. Properly follow proper protocols.
And this one is 10% of U.S. high school students graduating without basic object permanence skills.
U.S. high schoolers have dropped to 17th in science, 25th in math, and a troubling 180th place in the basic cognitive awareness most humans develop as toddlers. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan is asking Congress to fund increased after-school disguise and reveal programs.
I'm still here, right? By the time I get to high school, it's too late. You have to identify the problem between 15 months and 18 months.
Christine, what makes these videos so different from what The Onion did and does in print, or I guess we have to say in text nowadays?
Yeah, the Onion sort of struggled to get itself into video format for a while, but it finally really hit it in around 2010 with it when they started the Onion News Network. And this is kind of the entry of the millennial generation into The Onion. And they realized that to satirize cable news, you have to really be over the top with your format again. You're getting really far away from the very dry approach, although you can hear that it's still there. And they just really, really figured out how to represent The Onion visually in a way that hadn't been done before. And it was incredibly successful.
So we haven't talked much about The Onion's sort of, what would you say, itinerance across the country, right? From Madison, yeah. New York, and then as we get into the early 2010s, an edict comes down from management to the writing team. We're closing in New York, we're moving to Chicago, or lose your job. Talk about how that was received.
Yeah, that was came as a total shock to the editorial staff. So at that point, The Onion had moved to New York in early 2001, just the editorial staff, the business staff stayed in the Midwest, in Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago. They were doing very well in New York. They had gotten going with the Onion News Network. They were doing really hilarious stuff with social media when it was new, and doing very well. And then the word came down from above that they were going to consolidate all the operations in Chicago, which, you know, from a business point of view, I can't necessarily argue with that. Why did they have two offices? That made no sense. But the editorial staff was really, really, really upset. And they basically tried to plot a takeover and get someone else to buy The Onion and keep them in New York. But they failed, unfortunately.
Another thing that The Onion, you talked about this book being a history of the media and changes in media. Social media is a big part mm-hmm. of the Onion's era as well. Obviously, it didn't exist when the Onion was founded or even when the Onion went online. Yeah. How did that change what the Onion did?
Yeah, so the Onion went through all the same challenges with social media and the platform era that other media and news sites did. So when Facebook and YouTube and other places became the place where they became these intermediaries between people and their news source, because now you get it by clicking through, you know, an article on Facebook or something rather than going directly to the website. And so they had to navigate all of that. Their ad revenue really altered because now their ad revenue is coming online. And at first, this was, online advertising became a huge cash cow for them, but then the bottom just completely fell out of that for them and everybody else. And then they really had to struggle for clicks. So there was a period of time where the Onion was then sold to like private equity. And, you know, again, like many, many other media sites went through the same thing and many places went under in this is the 2010s, early 2020s. So the Onion managed to weather all of that somehow, and until they were bought by new owners in 2024. But in the book details the struggles that the Onion, as well as other media outlets, had during this time, which was very, very difficult.
And then ultimately, so you mentioned the private equity era and the sort of the challenges. Ultimately, it ends up back in seemingly, I guess, benevolent ownership. I can't believe I'm forgetting the guy's name. Ben Collins. He's Tim Onion on Blue Sky, right. Which is where I think of him most. Tell me about that. What is the Onion doing today, business wise?
Yeah, so the Onion went up for sale again. They were, you know, kind of gotten rid of by their hedge fund or whoever owned them at that time. And Ben Collins was a former NBC disinformation reporter who was actually born the year the Onion was founded in 1988. And he felt that the Onion was one of the only places that told the truth anymore. So he teamed up with a guy named Jeff Lawson, who is, a rich tech guy, but he was using his money for good, we hope. And they basically bought the Onion for the purpose of setting it free. And one of the things that they did was they won that bid to buy InfoWars that came just a few months after they bought the Onion in 2024. And then the really great thing they did was bring back the Onion's print edition, which is now something you can subscribe to. It comes out monthly. And apparently they may have more subscribers at this point than there are to the print edition of the Washington Post. So we'll see what happens with that. But
oh my gosh,
the Onion seems to be in a new era. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
What is do you have a subscriber? I heard an interview with you, I think it was from last year, where it was in the 30,000 something.
I mean, they're up above. Last I heard, they were up above 55,000. I mean, I don't know where they are now, but wow. but Ben Collins was, you know, he was doing this sort of tongue in cheek, but maybe not completely tongue in cheek. That their subscribers have been going up and up, and he was like, "We are going to beat the Washington Post," after, you know, the Washington Post kind of fired their entire news staff recently. And anyway, so I'm watching all of this with great interest.
I appreciate they've named themselves Global Tetrahedron.
That's from a joke from Our Dumb Century, written by former Onion head writer Todd Hanson.
Yeah, maybe that's a good time to sort of remind us of the Onion's influence on programs like, you know, very directly on the Colbert Report, Daily Show, other news satire, both in terms of alumni and just in terms of ethos.
Yeah, so former Onion editor Ben Carlin was tapped to be the Daily Show's head writer right when Jon Stewart was taking it over in around 2000. And so the Onion was directly involved in making that show as good as it was. Rich Dom, who was also a former Onion editor and writer, then became executive producer and writer for the Colbert Report. So he also, so again, the Onion has had direct influence on both of those places.
What did you learn between working at the Onion and now, especially writing this book, about what makes satire work?
Satire has to be, it's that multi-layeredness. There's been a lot of extremely smart and perceptive people who have come through the Onion who really, really understand how language works and can work with it in a very creative way. It's funny when I think about just on a personal level, that the odd thing that's happened with knowing, being part of the Onion from the very beginning and having read it for all this time, like, it's very easy for me to read things that aren't satire satire now, because it works on that level. But I think that the, if you really pay attention to how the Onion writes and the very economical and focused way in which they work, you can really learn a lot about just about good writing by watching what the Onion does.
I wonder what it says to you that, you know, I'm going to share another one of my favorite all-time headlines. This is 2003, bassist unaware rock band Christian. I don't know why. That is just stuck in my head. It's this guy, Brad Rowland, the new bassist for Pillar of Salt, remains oblivious to the fact that he's in a Christian rock band, sources reported Tuesday. What does it say to you that people like me, other, some of our callers, texters, they remember these stories years, sometimes decades later?
Yeah. I've heard so many of these stories. People are like, I've had this Onion article on my desk for 22 years, you know? I think, you know, it goes back to the Onion is people keep saying it's the only source of truth in media. And I think that that's what people are connecting to. The Onion says things that you just don't hear anywhere else. And I think that that is what people really connect with. And I do as well.
So, you know, we mentioned this idea that we're in a post-truth world, some say. I mean, I still believe in truth, but other people believe in truth that's different from the facts that I understand to be true. So I guess, what is the role of satire and of the Onion in a world where, you know, to borrow that phrase, people feel entitled not only to their own opinions, but their own facts?
The fact checking has actually always been really important at The Onion, as well as at The Daily Show and other places too. I mean, I think of The Onion as almost a sort of enlightenment thing. You know, they really believe in doing research and investigating. It sounds to me like you might have some ideas about this. I'd actually kind of turn
well, no.
Like, what do you think? Because I feel like you have something on your mind that you.
I don't know. You mentioned this, right? You read real news stories now about renaming military bases after obscure people who happen to share names with Civil War generals and things like that. And I feel like, I mean, that could have been an Onion story.
No, to look at, I mean, I think that what's happening now is, you know, people are like, you can't tell the difference between the real news and the Onion anymore. And I think it's because people in the real world are now acting like people in Onion stories. And because it's
straight-faced lying.
Straight-faced lying. And because of the way, you know, reporting works and the way, I don't know, like, it's like you can. It's so easy to manipulate for bad actors to manipulate what it comes out in the news. It's been a problem for a long time, but it's still a huge problem. And that's part of it. You know, people in real life, things are now sounding like Onion stories, and that's, I don't know, that.
Yeah. And I guess you asked my thought, we have just about a minute left, but you know, the people who created the Onion crack something about the way the media works and the codes and the things like that. And I think that, now we've seen people in power have cracked something about the way the media works.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the president can call up people and say something. You know, the war's coming to an end, for example, as he did earlier this week to a reporter, and the reporter publishes it, and the stock market goes up, and then turns out that just wasn't true. And it's like, you know, you crack the code of the media. I don't know. There's something to that. Maybe that's an essay that needs to be written.
No, I think you're absolutely right on about that.
Christine Wentz is the author of Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. You can find it now wherever books are sold from Running Press. Christine, thanks so much. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you for having me.
And that is it for us today. I'm going to get self-indulgent here for a moment, because coming up tomorrow, we're going to be a little self-indulgent on the show. We're going to look back on 10 years of the 21st show. We first went on air March 14th, 2016. That is this weekend. We are going to be looking back on that decade tomorrow on the program. If you happen to have a particularly memorable episode or conversation of the 21st show you've heard, could be good, could be for a bad reason, I want to hear about it. You can send us an email. talk@21stshow.org is the address. talk@21stshow.org. And then maybe we'll share a little excerpt of that program tomorrow here on the 21st show.
which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. And Reginald Hardwick's our news director. You can find a podcast of our program on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen. You can also find links to all that at our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.